2 million hacked credentials is the latest example of information exfiltration from networks their owners thought were secure. Those organizations were not amateurs either. Google, Facebook, Yahoo, Twitter, and others. You can read more about that exfiltration at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. The threat landscape is changing, and your agency's response must change to keep yourself off that list of compromised organizations. Charlie Kroom is Vice President of Cybersecurity Solutions at Lockheed Martin, former director of the Defense Information Systems Agency, and my guest on Industry Chatter today. Charlie, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. What are you seeing across the threat landscape today in cybersecurity that you either haven't seen before or you haven't seen as much of and is becoming more prevalent now?
Yeah, Francis, good afternoon and happy Thursday to you. You know, it's kind of interesting because the approaches of attack in some ways have stayed somewhat the same. You know, we've always had to worry about phishing attacks through emails. We've always been concerned about what people plug into their computers like thumb drives. It seems like we've had issues before when a user goes to a website because those websites contain malware. We're seeing certainly an increase in those websites that have malware on it now. But even for the more sophisticated defender, if they can't get in the front door, they're going to come in the back door for a Lockheed Martin through a supply chain. So I think certainly increased sophistication. And as we, move towards more mobility, certainly that's a significant threat opportunity. It increases our threat surface. And I don't have to mention, I don't think, the insider threat and the news that that's gotten recently. So insider threats generally don't happen a lot, but when they do, they're significant. I think also what's interesting is, as we build out our cloud capabilities, it's certainly going to become a new target as we consolidate our data into one location. And so there's much a discussion going on how you secure that cloud. Cloud also is being used by our adversaries. You know, the denial of services attacks today are becoming more sophisticated. And why is that? Because they're starting to use this cloud technology on steroids to increase their attack capabilities. I think I would conclude just by saying that we're also seeing some attacks that are becoming more malicious. And I'll just give the example that everyone knows, the Aramco example, where 30,000 computers were destroyed. So I think these are the trends: more sophistication, modes of operation that we've seen before, but more sophisticated than those. We've seen two significant insider threats, and we're seeing greater malicious attacks.
The Aramco issue is interesting to me, Charlie, because that strikes me as that's a definite message being sent there. Normally, if you have access to machines sufficient to be able to destroy those machines, you have access to the machines to be able to extract information, too. And if somebody's engaged just in an espionage incident, you want to be in a computer as anonymously as possible, and you want to be there as long as possible so you can keep taking stuff out of there. And so it strikes me that the motivation to melt somebody's computers down, as we saw with Aramco, is maybe one that we're not going to see as often as some of the others.
Yeah, Francis, I think you said it well. Why kill the golden goose that's giving you national secrets and companies' intellectual property and valuable economic data? So you don't want to kill that golden goose. But it's important to understand the intent of an adversary. And that adversary apparently wanted to make a statement.
The intent of an adversary, I think, is interesting, too, when you connect it with what you were talking about a moment ago about adversaries using the cloud. And it's something that I don't think I've heard discussed before, but the tools that we use to succeed in information technology are the very same tools that somebody could use against us. And I wonder if that mentality doesn't get lost sometimes.
Well, I think, like everything else, we're seeing an evolving threat, and it's a new evolving threat, but it's going to grow in sophistication and use.
As the threat landscape continues to change and especially accelerate in sophistication, are there tools that agencies have at their disposal that maybe they're not maximizing their use of right now, Charlie?
Well, for Lockheed Martin, it's not about the tools. It's about the talent. And we spend a lot of time on this talent in terms of internal training and making sure that they're the best of breed. You know, the team, the SEAL Team 6 type of mentality for the talent we have. So I think we start with talent first. And then second, I think you have to recognize that protecting yourself and defending yourself is a team sport. We at Lockheed Martin rely on a cyber alliance to help us do that, 21 best-of-breed companies that we use to protect ourselves. And I think it's a good example for all. We're in this together, and we've got to collectively work at this problem together, which leads you to the value of sharing information and how you do that. So, again, I don't believe it's about the tools. I believe it's about the talent you have and the processes you put in place, and let the tools enable the talent and the process.
The information sharing concept has been a difficult one for agencies to work around, especially for the agencies that are sharing information on an ongoing basis with critical infrastructure companies, with private sector companies like yours, and with other organizations. What is your sense of how that relationship is evolving? Is that relationship becoming easier, or is that relationship becoming a little more challenging because of some of the issues that we've talked about already?
Well, I think it's actually becoming easier, but we started with a bad premise, I believe. When we share information and we talk about an intrusion or an attempted intrusion into a company, generally the individual that gets blamed is the one that's been intruded on. And I find it interesting, you know, if you compare it to a burglary of a house, you know, you don't generally blame the homeowner. You go after the criminal, the burglar that broke into the house. But there's so much negativity about a company that has an intrusion. And what we really need to do is put the blame on those who deserve it, the criminal activity that stole the intellectual property or the economic data. If we can get beyond that, we can open up our sharing a little bit. Second of all, I think companies and the government are very good at anonymizing of who was intruded on. And we can share very valuable information without knowing the specifics of the company. So I think the sharing is going to increase. We're seeing MITRE Corporation establishing some standards for sharing. And this is really important because we have to share this information machine to machine to enable speed. And as we, you know, change out our infrastructures and enable this sharing of information machine to machine and enabling our tools to receive this information and automatically configure themselves to do as the information provides, we're going to be a lot better off. So I think sharing will increase, and it'll get better and better.
Charlie Kroom of Lockheed Martin is my guest on Industry Chatter today. When that information exchange idea and who takes the blame leads me then to attribution. Are we getting better at figuring out who it is exactly that is trying to get into the networks, both on the industry side and the agency side? Or is that not as important as it's been in the past?
I'm not sure it's important, but we are getting better at it. And what is important is that we understand the characteristics of the intrusion, not necessarily who's doing the intrusion. And the characteristics are, you know, what type of weapon are they using? How are they delivering that weapon? How are they controlling that weapon? Those are the critical things we need to know to prevent those types of intrusions. Obviously, when you do the forensics on that type of information, sometimes it leads you back to who's doing it. But in essence, it's not up to at least the commercial industries to worry about who's doing it. It's really our business to understand how we can dissect those intrusions and prevent future intrusions from the information we gain.
The relationships are important here, Charlie, and that's what I want to talk about when we come back from the break. Charlie Kroom's Vice President of Cybersecurity Solutions for Lockheed Martin, my guest today on Industry Chatter. We'll continue our conversation in a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Charlie Kroom of Lockheed Martin's my guest on Industry Chatter today. And Charlie, relationships, as we talked about before, are important when it comes to the information sharing environment. And I use that term in small letters, not in capital letters, as led by Shmendra Paul. But that environment of sharing information requires that people are comfortable enough, at least with the organizations that they're interacting with, if they don't know the people involved. How has that relationship building and generating gotten in the past couple of years, and how do you see that moving forward, especially when it comes to some of the things that we've discussed on the program so far?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think you're exactly right, Francis. It is built on trust. You can't share information with those you don't trust. But we've been at this a number of years, particularly the defense industries, the Lockheed Martin and equivalents, with the Department of Defense. And the Department of Defense has served as a hub of information. So as we share information with the Department of Defense through the Defense Industrial Base, they anonymize that and send it back out to other companies. And so everyone's contributing and all are receiving. It is a great model that we've been working. I would also say, in addition to other participants, you know, we're seeing greater, I think, sharing of information between prime contractors and their suppliers. We've had some new DFAR regulations come out on 18 November. We should be taking what is now suggested and providing information back and forth, and I think we'll see prime and suppliers now helping each other share information to become more secure. I would also add, I think the commercial world has a lead role with the government to ensure our critical infrastructure is protected. That critical infrastructure mostly sits out in the commercial world, and I think we can help the government secure that better than what we've done. So I think those three things are really important for our future and sharing of information.
You were on a panel with me at an event that a firm hosted about a month or a month and a half ago, and one of the topics of conversation there was the differences between continuous monitoring and continuous diagnostics, and the jargon that's kind of sprung up over the past couple of years in the federal government about how to do that, what the White House calls things and what agencies call things. What's your sense of how that is shaking out for the agencies and how they're paying attention to the things that they have to do to comply with mandates, but also the ultimate goal is to keep the network secure, regardless of what the compliance issues are?
Sure. Well, continuous monitoring, of course, is extremely important. Department of Homeland Security recognized that, and fortunately, Lockheed Martin has won, or at least a partner of one of the contracts, to provide continuous monitoring to the Department of Homeland Security. I think knowledge, constant knowledge of what is going on and what you're trying to protect is extremely important. You have to have visibility over what you're protecting. And whether you want to call it monitoring or get into the argument of diagnostics, both are important. Both have to be present. Both have to have a sense of priority so you can take lots of information and break it down into what's critically important to those who have to take actions.
Getting through that information is important. And it's the same kind of data issue that we're seeing in all other kinds of big data, isn't it? Is just trying to figure out what you've got on your hands so you know what to be able to do with it and take action.
Exactly true. I would say, you know, it's a risk management problem. So you got to start from the beginning of, first of all, identifying what you're trying to protect. What are the golden nuggets? If you understand you can't protect everything over a large enterprise, understand what you should be protecting. And I think that would help then figure out what you need to do in terms of what you need to have monitoring over and what type of reporting you have to have back.
Are we sufficiently into the post can't protect everything or can protect everything era, Charlie, where agencies understand that that's not reality anymore?
Yeah, I certainly think we are there. It's difficult, however, sometimes to identify what your golden nuggets are. Specifically, you know, in my old organization, the Defense Information Systems Agency, a global network with lots of golden nuggets to protect. How do you define which are most important? How do you prioritize that? And then how do you build the protections around that? But affordability is driving this. We can't protect and secure everything. We've got to identify clearly what we want to protect and then decide how we're going to do that.
What were some of the tests that you applied at DISA to decide how you prioritize that stuff? Because, as you say, it's not just a black or white area. There's a lot of gray area in between. Well, this is pretty important, but not as important as this other stuff.
Well, clearly you got to start with the mission. And so some missions are more important than others. If you're supporting an active mission where combat is involved, and they need to have always-on capabilities, clearly that rises to the top of what you need to protect. And so you've got to work with your customers, always work with your customers, understand their mission, and then prioritize accordingly.
When you were at DISA, one of the things that that you were instrumental in doing was setting a standard for authentication using CAT cards. Agencies have had an opportunity to do similar kinds of things. Do you see some motion toward that? Do you see an indication that agencies are going to leverage some of the things like the HSPD-12 cards that they already have at their disposal to help them secure their networks moving forward?
Well, I think they have to. You know, there are three things that are really critical that I learned from Richard Hale, who taught me about cybersecurity when I went to DISA. The first is you've got to really understand what's on your network. You've got to know not only what's on your network, but how everything's configured, both software and hardware. Two, you've got to protect the identities, which is what you talked about. You know, is the equipment really the equipment that you have? And are the people that are on that network really the trusted person that you really think they are? And then third, you got to understand your vulnerabilities and be able to remediate those. Those are the basic fundamentals of cybersecurity, and you know, they take care of what we call that 80% threat. But identity management is still very difficult, and getting that trusted user and trusted equipment is a problem that we are still putting technology against so that we can do that better.
I am certainly not suggesting that agencies haven't done anything about identity management so far. That's not the case. They have. They've been very active at identity management. But with the mobility explosion that we talked about earlier in the program, is identity management going to become maybe issue 1 or 1A, do you think, in the next year or so?
It certainly is the prime issue.
As we get closer to that identity management issue, does that then do we go back to the idea, too, that we're not going to be able to necessarily ascertain identities 100% of the time, just as we can't protect data and networks 100% of the time? Or is that something where the goal is still 100%?
The goal is 100%. And there's a lot of ways of doing identity management. New ways coming out. Lockheed Martin, for example, has what we call a gesture, meaning just a hand motion or a scribble on a tablet is unique to, believe it or not, people. And so there's an identity management that we haven't used in the past. It's new technologies, and it's a wave of the future. So I think we're going to see a combination of things, be it a CAT card, be it a gesture across a thing, be it a bio fingerprint, et cetera. We're going to see a number of these used to make sure we lock down the identities.
So as you talk about those kinds of things, Charlie, it sounds like you think we're just at the very beginning of understanding all of the ways that we can do identity management.
I think there's technology to come. Yes, sir.
Charlie, always great to talk to you, and I thank you for coming on today. You did a terrific job standing in for Stephanie Hill because she is absolutely consumed with preparing for a really cool event that's one of my favorite of the year.
Well, if I could take a moment just to speak to that.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the opportunity. You know, Lockheed Martin is proud to support the AFSCME's Bethesda's Night Out for the Children's Gala. This helps raise money for the House of Ruth and the Children's Inn at the National Institute of Health. So we're very proud of that. The gala is actually going to take place on March 22nd at the Marriott Washington. But I would encourage our listeners, if you want to learn more about that and help support, I think, two wonderful charities, please go visit the AFSCME website at www.afsciabethesda.com to learn more about what you can do to support these very beneficial charities.
Yeah, it's a terrific event. It's one of my favorites of the year, and it's March 22nd, 2014, and I love every excuse I can get to go to the Marriott Woodman Park, and so this will be another good one. Charlie, thank you very much for coming on the program
Francis,
today.
Thank you for having me.
Charlie Crooms, Vice President for Cybersecurity Solutions at Lockheed Martin. You can hear my conversation with Charlie posted later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll archive it there.